We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to the Mind on My Money podcast presented by Pinnacle Trust. Hosted by RebelGrove.com publisher Neil McCready and Pinnacle Trust financial guru Martin Palomo, the Mind on My Money podcast tackles the financial questions we're all thinking about. From paying for college to saving for retirement, from life insurance needs to 401ks and everything in between. The goal is to help you take the stress out of financial concerns and give you some tips to enjoy life while your mind is on your money. Now here are your hosts, Neil McCready and Martin Palomo.
Welcome to another edition of Mind on My Money, presented by Pinnacle. I'm Neil McCready, Martin Palomo of Pinnacle with me here today after his travels all over the southern part of the United States of America. You might even dipped into the northern parts. I'm not sure. We'll talk about that in a minute. But, yeah, we'll get into all sorts of stuff. We catch up with one another a little bit. Summertime. Mortgage rates are up. The Fed wants to raise interest rates maybe 0.75 points. A recession still looming. There's I told Martin, I don't want to go doom and gloom today. And then the first 38 seconds of the show, I'm doom and gloom. So I gotta pull myself out of it.
We'll dip into a little bit of the doom and gloom, and then we'll give some silver lining too.
Okay. We'll see.
We'll put some sunshine and clouds inside of that darkness.
We're going to have silver lining. I'll tell you real quick. I'm coming from the Clark Ford Studios, Clark Ford's in Amory, Mississippi, 662-257-1900. Call that number. Ask for my buddy, Corey Clark. Tell Corey what Ford product you're looking for. He'll send you a quote within 15 minutes and business hours, right to the bottom line. No hassle, no haggle. You get your quote. The rest completely up to you. Shop that quote around. You can do what I've done, what I recommend that you do, and that's hop into a Clark Ford today, 662-257-1900. And Martin, before we get rolling, tell the people what's going on at Pinnacle.
Oh, man, we are summertime at Pinnacle, which usually tends to be a little bit slower, slower for us in regards to meeting with folks, just because, you know, it's vacation times, and I know people don't have tons of time with their kids out of school or grandkids out of school, so they try to squeeze all that in. But man, we've been meeting with a decent amount of our clients, as you alluded to, the roadshow, which I'm sure we'll talk about a little bit, through SEC country and a little bit in the Midwest and Texas. But anyway, yeah, man, we're really when we're meeting with folks, really kind of talking about the plan too, making sure that we're still on target, to meet whatever folks' goals are, whether they're next year or 10 years or 20 years from now. And, you know, the beauty with folks who are, 10, 20, 30 years out from, really needing to tap into their funds is, man, this time is going to be a little blip on the radar. I mean, even back when COVID was, the markets were in free fall during COVID, we even said that will be a blip. And of course, I didn't realize it was going to be as fast of a blip as it was. But anyway, man, that's kind of, the thing that we can control is how we do the planning and what our reactions are. The things we can't control is, what the Fed does, what markets do. And we just try to help people from making really irrational, permanent decisions, which, right now you might hear people go, man, I'm just going to sell everything and go to cash. And it is just, that is the absolute, if you're wanting to commit financial suicide, that's the right thing to do. I don't think most people want to do that because it's, I mean, you're already through the worst part of the storm. It's just waiting for the clouds to clear and the sunshine to come out. So, you know, folks that don't have a plan, a lot of times all they have to focus on is performance, but folks who have a plan can look and say, hey, am I on track? Did I get derailed? Are we in good shape? And can kind of rest easy. So, man, that's kind of what we're doing with clients. That was the roadshow was a lot about that too. And if that's not happening in your world and you want it to happen, you know, you can call us 601-957-0323 or email us info@mypinnwealth.com. And we'll see, you know, have a chat with you. If it makes sense, we move forward. We've had chats with several listeners to the show. And, you know, a couple of them have made sense and we've moved forward. And a couple of them, I say, hey, this is really simple. Here's what you need to do. You know, they knock it out you know, and I take care of them in that way. And then maybe one day it comes back around. So, yeah, man, if your gut's in your throat, give us a shout. We'll see if we can help you.
All right. Tell me about the roadshow. Where all did you go? Let's talk towns and stuff.
Yeah, man, we kind of did I'll tell you where we slept and where we met because we drove through a lot of towns.
All right.
It was kind of a tour through SEC country accidentally. We did, Reed and I, it was 8 days, about 3,200 miles on the vehicle. And of course I had been home only one day before that trip. I had, you know, previously been, down at a conference, which was, an 800 mile round trip. So I locked in about 4,000 miles in a 2 week period. My first stop for my conference was Florida. It was in Destin. I know that's a horrible Gators place to have to do, you know, a conference and go to work, but it was a really good conference. It was, the Big Eye, which is the Independent Insurance Agents of Mississippi. They're clients of ours. And also we have several clients that are independent insurance agents and, you know, some sell their practice and come to us and some, you know, have clients that they need someone to do the investment work because they're specialists in insurance. And so they'll bring us in and we'll help them out there. But then, so I came home, man, I picked Reed up. We ate lunch in Tuscaloosa. So check, you know, SEC in Alabama. We did eat dinner in, not Athens, but we did eat dinner, you know, on the east side of Atlanta. And then we stopped and stayed in Columbia, South Carolina, which is, we had a client there. So, you know, check Georgia, check South Carolina.
You know, it's funny. A lot of people, we have this conversation on the Oxford Exxon podcast, some like SEC towns and stuff. I love Columbia, South Carolina. Yet a lot of people despise it. I mean, they hate it. And every time I go, I really like it. And people tell me that, oh, you wouldn't like it if you live there and all that stuff. And I'm like, well, I didn't say I was living there, but
I really enjoyed it. I thought Columbia was a cool town. So we stayed downtown Columbia.
Yeah.
And, you know, it kind of had a little bit of a Jackson feel and like, you know, some of the buildings were older. Mm-hmm. You know, it wasn't like a brand new town, you know, with lots of new construction going on. But man, there were people in the streets. There was live music going on outside. So Reed and I were kind of walking around downtown when we got there, and it was late when we got there. I mean, it was like 9 o'clock. We sat down, listened to a little bit of music, had a couple snacks, to gear up for our client meeting, you know, the next morning. But man, I really enjoyed Columbia. It was a happening town. Unfortunately, Jackson, that could never happen in Jackson or will never happen in Jackson. Jackson is just the downtown area is completely dead after 5 o'clock. And it's really unfortunate, man, because Jackson, there's so much things that Jackson could be. And it's just not. And I don't know what, and I know people say, oh, don't bring a problem to the table without a solution. And I like that. I like that saying, you know, hey, if you're going to come to me with a problem, come with a solution too. I don't know what a solution is. I don't know how you fix Jackson.
Well, I mean, you'd have to have brand new leadership.
Yeah, and there's got to be revenue from somewhere, and there's just not.
And you've got to have someone. You got to have someone who has vision, who could somehow convince corporations to move there.
Yeah.
Good luck. You would have to. You would have to take every bit of the corruption that is in that city government out. Good luck. I don't think it's doable. I mean, I hate that because there, I have friends who are invested in hotels and such down there, and
yeah,
I would love nothing more than for them to do well.
Yeah, I mean, like, there's really nice places downtown, like the Westin is the newest place that's really downtown. That's cool. We've got there's another hotel, I can't remember the name of it. It has kind of like a rooftop. It may be called like the Faulkner or something like that. A rooftop patio. It's, you know, it's really, really cool. I mean, but no one goes to Jackson just because the the crime and the it's falling apart, man. It's, I wish it was different. I really do. I wish something could change.
Yeah, you'd have to completely eradicate. You'd have to completely change the culture of the city.
Yeah, I think you just have to start. I mean, you have to start from scratch. And I don't know how you do that with a city. I mean, I know how you do it with a business, right? But I don't know how you do that with a city.
People have done it. Birmingham's completely revitalized.
Yeah.
Oklahoma City is completely revitalized.
Dude, so Oklahoma City was on the latter part. Well, and we can talk about that as we go through. But it was Oklahoma City was awesome.
All right.
So
I love it. I love it.
I'd never been.
So. Yeah, and it gets better every time. I'm actually looking forward to going back there soon. I've selfishly told my son that, hey, when you start looking at schools, you really should look at OU. And part of that is because I like OKC.
Dude, it's awesome.
Yeah, it's I know, it's a hidden gem. Do you know it's a top 20 city now in the country in terms of population?
It doesn't surprise me, but I didn't know that. But when we pulled in, when we were coming into Oklahoma City, here's my ignorance. I thought I was going to roll up on Oklahoma City and I was going to roll up on Jackson. That's just in my head. I was like, there's nothing in Oklahoma. I mean, there's oil and stuff, but, you know, there's nothing in Oklahoma, oil and Indians. And that was what was in my head.
Mm-hmm.
And, dude, I was totally underestimated Oklahoma City, which is really very quickly, even reading, I was like, dude, I want to come back here just to explore.
Yeah.
Because this looks like a really cool city.
Their downtown, you expect it to, like, pull in and it be just tumbleweeds.
Yeah, that's kind of.
And yeah, like the old West, you sort of expect to see somebody saunter up to you on a horse and say, howdy, partner.
Little wagon. Yeah, horse.
It's not that at all. It's, and yet it's a super friendly town.
Talking bad about, you know, Oklahoma. Like, it's like being in the gutter and calling someone trash.
Well, they benefited greatly when they got the NBA team there. In all seriousness, they did. And they've got a beautiful minor league ballpark down there in, right there in downtown. And then there's two or three areas. I haven't been there in so long that I can't remember what they're called, but two or three areas that are really cool, kind of, you know, where the young people go, and they lots of restaurants and bars, and you know, they're kind of working on, you know, their art scene and all that stuff is still sort of developing. But I think it's fast becoming. When I say destination city, I don't mean to go on a vacation. I think it's fast becoming a place that young people look at and go, this wouldn't be a bad place to start my career.
That's right. I mean, and I mean, the proximity to Dallas makes it, you know, very attractive as well. And the cool thing that I noticed too is like Stillwater, where Oklahoma State is only probably, I'm going to just guess, 45 minutes to an hour north of Oklahoma City.
I think it's a little more than that. You can get there
relatively close.
You can get there in an hour and a half, and you can get to Norman in about 20, 25 minutes.
Yeah. I mean, Norman was literally still the sprawl of Oklahoma City.
Yeah.
South.
Yeah.
Which I thought was just really cool, man, because it's like, you know, your two in-state rivals are really not far from each other, which is kind of cool.
Well, and that's, you know, people always ask me, like, bucket list, and I never can think of it in the moment, but if I have a minute to think about it, one of like my bucket list games, and I need to go soon because they might not be playing each other because Oklahoma's going to the SEC, but I want to go to Bedlam, the OU Oklahoma State game. I want to go to Bedlam because I think it's just, it's crazy. I need to like make that happen.
Yeah. So Oklahoma City, that's my revealed diamond in the rough. That was my unexpected gem that I loved the most. But so let's back up.
So you were in Columbia, South Carolina. Where'd you go next?
So we went to Raleigh, North Carolina after Columbia, and Raleigh has quickly become a city that I really, really like too.
Yeah.
And so the story behind Raleigh, I don't know if you know this or not. We have a couple of vendors in Raleigh that are tech related for our firm. And then I have a client there too. So it's kind of that was a dual purpose meeting. I was meeting with our vendors and then meeting with our client. But so Raleigh, maybe 10 years ago, was Jackson, like falling apart, hole in the wall. And so when I went to Raleigh for the first time, I went downtown, I asked our vendor there, I was like, man, like these buildings look new. And he's like, dude, this Raleigh, downtown Raleigh is brand new. I was like, well, what's the deal? What happened? He's like, man, no one used to come downtown. He's like, it was dangerous. And he's like, and we really had a problem with, you know, with homeless in downtown Raleigh, and it just wasn't safe. And I was like, okay. I was like, well, what happened? And he's like, this is crazy to say this. He's like, but one day we woke up and all the homeless people were gone. I was like, okay, did they just like get on a train or what happened? He's like, rumor is that they were rounded up on buses and sent to different parts of the country. I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty aggressive. But you know, someone did something about it. And then it revitalized downtown. So Raleigh is a cool play. I really like Cary, North Carolina too, just right outside of Raleigh. There's a little place there called Drive Shack, which we're not sponsored by Drive Shack. So this is a shameless plug. We're not making any money. It's kind of like Top Golf, except for you can play games that's like an accuracy game. Like you can play, they have blackjack where they deal you cards laid out on the, you know, all the way from the where you're driving the or where you're hitting from all the way to the back fences. And I have different cards that you look at on the screen. You try to hit those cards and make 21. So it's a lot of fun. So like even people who suck at like playing golf can have fun at Drive Shack.
Oh, I'm looking at the site right now.
So
a driving range is only half the story at Drive Shack.
Yeah, dude, it's cool, man. And they've got one in Orlando. Yeah. I think there's one in maybe Palm Beach. There's one in Raleigh. So Reed, I don't know if our listeners know this. You may not even know this. So Reed, my business partner, he played golf at Ole Miss. And he's a really, really good golfer. I've never even come close to beating him in anything related to golf. And I beat him in blackjack. It drops. I took a picture of it too, so that I have a memorial that, you know, that I beat him in a game of golf. Although it was blackjack at Drive Shack, it wasn't on a golf course, but it doesn't matter. We were hitting a small ball with a club, so it was golf, and I beat him. That's an accomplishment.
That is, yeah. I'm sitting here looking at the pictures and stuff. It looks cool.
It is cool, man. They have darts. They have this little game where you know, try to hit monsters and blow them. It's fun, man. Christopher loves it. So anyway, we went from Raleigh to Asheville, and then we had a client in Cashers, North Carolina, which is a really beautiful part of the country. Kind of the beginning of the Smoky Mountains on the North Carolina side is really, really nice. And then we drove up to Knoxville, and we were actually there during the Super Regionals. We have two clients in Knoxville.
Ooh.
Yep. We didn't talk baseball with them. Cause they had just, they had just lost to Notre Dame, when we got there.
What do you think of Knoxville?
We stayed on West Knoxville, which is kind of newer and nice. We went downtown Knoxville when we arrived. We ate Chipotle, apparently on campus, we were on Cumberland, which I don't know anything about. I've never been on campus. Well, I guess that's not true. I have been on campus. I just didn't know I was on campus. And it seems like UT's campus is maybe a little more urban than I thought it would be.
Yeah.
Which is kind of cool. Downtown Knoxville looked kind of, you know, Jackson-ish.
Mm-hmm.
But the west side of Knoxville was really nice. That's where we stayed. And then we had a client in Chattanooga that we went to go. We had two in Chattanooga we went to see. And then Nashville on the way out to visit with another client. And then we drove to St. Louis from Nashville. And then from St. Louis, we were to Oklahoma City, my favorite little gym. And then down to Fort Worth and then home, dude. So it was a long 8 days on the road. Reed and I are really good friends. So obviously we're business partners too, but, on the Friday we were coming home, he had been in the car with me for, I think we calculated it was about 40 hours at that point. You know, we were at about miles 2,800, 2,900. He didn't talk to me too much on the way home. He was ready to be home with his, with his wife and kids. And I talk a lot. I probably got on his nerves and he's like, dude, just shut up.
I was going to ask, did y'all ever have like a fight? Did you argue?
We did not, man. I think the only time that I irritated him was, the stretch from Fort Worth to Jackson. He drove half of the way. I drove half of the way. He says I'm an aggressive driver. But what that really means is that I drive in the right lane. And then when I need to pass someone, I scoot over and pass them. And then I get back in the right lane, where Reed just drives in the left lane the whole time.
Oh, I would not like Reed.
Yep.
You're not supposed to hang in the left lane.
Yeah. And that's what I told him. I said, left lane is for passing.
It's for passing only.
And he said, he's like, left lane is where I'm the most comfortable driving. I said, yes, sir, you're driving.
So y'all went on I-20 from.
Yeah. Man, it was actually not a bad shot from Fort Worth on 20, because, I mean, we missed all of the Dallas stupidity because we were south of the city on 20. So it was an easy ride home. And we left Fort Worth at about 1 o'clock. So we also missed the, you know, heavy afternoon.
So you got back to Jackson around 7:30, 8 o'clock.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we did stop in, we stopped in your neck of the woods for a little bit of a dinner snack.
Oh, so. where'd you stop?
We were just outside of Ruston. When we got some gas and grabbed a bite to eat.
Did you go to the statue?
I have not been to the statue, man.
Oh, it's really cool. Yeah.
So is that in Ruston?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you know, our partner firm is based in Ruston.
Oh, partner. Really? Yeah.
Yeah, they're headquartered in Ruston. So when I go see the guys there, I'll ask them. Neil said take me to the statue.
Yeah. Say Neil said take him to his statue.
To his statue.
Yeah.
I love it. But yeah, man, it was a good trip. You know, surprisingly, you know, well, and Reed and I have been close quarters for a long time, just even here at Pinnacle. So, you know, and we've worked together for almost 10 years, man. So we didn't get on each other's nerves until I got on his nerves at the end because I was an aggressive driver. But it is what it is.
You know what's funny about DFW? Like, all the kids want to move there. Like, my daughter, you know, loves Dallas, wants to go there, or thinks she does. And it's so sprawl, and it's like, there's parts of Dallas that I love, there's parts of Dallas that I don't love. I get it. I get why it's so attractive to young people.
Well, and so I learned something about Dallas and Fort Worth last week too, which is that they're not the same. Fort Worth is a totally separate city with a totally separate personality and different culture.
Yes, completely.
And then Dallas is, you know, a totally different personality type. And it was explained to me that, Fort Worth is where you have the millionaire driving the $5,000 20-year-old beat up truck. Dallas is where you have the, you know, 30-year-old making $50,000 driving a Land Rover. Yeah. I was like, okay, that makes sense.
It's kind of
like Dallas is flashy. Fort Worth is just very plain Jane vanilla.
That's kind of my point. Like, I tell
I tell Campbell all the time, my oldest, she talks about Dallas, and I'm like, I get it, but you're just throwing a lot of money away there. You know, but you want to go someplace where there's a lot of young people and all that. I completely understand.
Yeah. Well, dude, my brother just moved to Fort Worth, and I kept calling it Dallas. I didn't realize, you know, I'm an idiot, man, in that regard. I don't know differences until we were there this week. And, but he lives west of Fort Worth in a place called Walsh, which is just a little suburb of Fort Worth, and a really nice little community. It was a farm. But they moved there because, and it makes sense. His personality type is, you know, he's going to end up being the millionaire that drives the $5,000 truck that's 20 years old. He's not the Lambo, you know, 35 year old with a Lamborghini making, you know, $100,000 a year. So there's something for everyone there. You just got to figure out the right place, I guess.
Yeah, for sure.
I think I would live in Fort Worth.
Well, I think I would too. But you and I are both a little older and practical at this point. I can see why a 22, 23-year-old would look at Dallas and go, yeah, this is for me. But
yeah. I mean, that's cool, man. And that's what I love about it is like, man, if that's for you, rock and roll, man. Go have at it. Go get your Lambo or your Range Rover. And, dude, another thing, here's a little bit of ignorance on my part, too. I thought TCU was somewhere else in Texas. I did not realize that TCU was
right there in Fort Worth.
Was in Fort Worth.
Yeah,
I had no clue.
Yeah, I got
so like SMU is Dallas. Yeah. TCU is Fort Worth. And yeah. I'm like, all right, there's another that this makes so much sense now that I understand the dynamics of.
Yeah, and that makes total Dallas and, that makes total sense when you've been there. Right.
It does. And I saw this huge football stadium and I asked Reed, I was like, dude, Jerry Land is in Dallas. Like, what stadium is that? And he's like, dude, that's TCU stadium. I was like, oh my God. I had no idea.
Yeah, Jerry Land is massive now. Jerry World. It's Jerry World. It's incredible. it is an incredible facility.
You know, and I'm sure, and I've never looked at it, I would love to break down the economics of Jerry World because he has built a marketing empire. And even though his team sucks for the most part, I shouldn't say sucks. You know, that's really wrong for me. So those are professionals and they're good at what they do. For the amount of money they're worth, they are very average for the amount of money that they're worth.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
You know, they built that for so much more than just the Cowboys though. I mean, they've turned it into, it's just such a big time arena. The one I'm looking forward to seeing is, Allegiant Stadium in Vegas.
Oh, the Death Star.
Yeah, I want to see the Death Star.
So, have you and I talked professional football at all ever? I don't think we have.
No.
Because I don't really care for professional football that much. I mean, when I was in D.C., I became a Skins fan because I was, you know, in D.C. I don't follow the Saints.
It's Commanders, Martin. Please don't offend.
They're the Redskins. So, when I was in D.C., I was a Redskins fan. Still have all my Redskins stuff. I have a Smoot jersey. See, representing a Mississippi boy for a Redskins fan. But I really don't care about the NFL that much. It just doesn't do anything for me. I love college football. And so Christopher, my son, who is, you know, anything sports, he's just a fanatic about. Loves the NFL. He's a Saints fan. You know, just a good little Mississippi boy. And so the Raiders are playing. We're watching it. And I'm just hanging out with him and watching what's on TV. And they call the stadium the Death Star, and it perked me up. You know, I'm a Star Wars nerd. I love Star Wars. I was like, that's my team. And he's like, what? And he's like, Dad, you don't even know. He's like, who's the coach? I was like, I have no idea. I don't care. That's my team. If they call their stadium the Death Star, that's my team. So I'm a Raiders fan now.
Oh, how about that?
Yeah. I don't even know who. Yeah, I don't know anything about the Raiders. And I won't learn anything about the Raiders. I don't care. But their stadium is nicknamed the Death Star. So that's my team. So if you ever go to a game and you need someone to go with you, I do want to go to the Death Star. So,
yeah, I'm headed there soon to that stadium, but it's to see soccer.
That's cool. Oh, speaking of soccer, dude, did you see they released the cities for the World Cup for when it's going to be in the U.S.?
I did.
Dude, we have so many that are close.
The one
I
want to go to Kansas City.
Dude, me too, man.
That's the one I want to go to.
It's going
to
be at the Chiefs at Arrowhead.
Yeah, I know.
I get it because it seats more people.
So many.
But anyway, go ahead.
That's just gonna be a hell of an event, man. I mean, the World Cup in Kansas City, which is a soccer crazy town. They love it.
Yes, it is.
And
yes, I see. And it's also like, dude, if it was at Sporting's Stadium, which I know it won't because just of the capacity, but that would be so awesome.
I've never been to that stadium. It's kind of on my bucket list of things to do. I've yet to be able, I guess because the quality of play is just not quite there. If you watch English Premier League, it's very difficult to turn around and watch Major League Soccer.
Yep.
Although Major League Soccer is getting better.
It's getting better, yeah.
I've watched some games. It is absolutely getting better. They just signed the new streaming deal with Apple Plus.
Yep.
That I think is going to help the
it just
the
it
sport.
Doesn't have the money that and the no. legacy that the Premier League has had.
No, so
we're an infant in this.
Well, look, I mean, look, this is the thing. In the entire world, the only league that compares to the English Premier League is the National Football League. I mean, that's it.
Yeah.
I mean, true. You know, the EPL is just, it's a beast.
Yeah. I mean, it is the beast. Yeah. That's where everyone wants to play.
Yeah. I mean, if you're a great young player, that's your goal. I mean, you see guys leaving La Liga and Bundesliga and all of that now.
But, 100%.
But you see, I think it was Chelsea is looking at Chicago Fire, one of their goalkeepers or something. So the fact that they're starting to even scout MLS should tell you that, hey, the quality of play is not so bad. And you go to some of these cities, and Kansas City's a great example. They get huge crowds at their MLS games. It's an event. And it's mostly, if you look around, it's mostly young people, which is, if you're running a business, that's awfully encouraging because those people have a little more time here on the Big Rock. And they might still be making babies, and if their babies become fans, well, you know how that cycle works. So,
yeah, I mean, dude, absolutely. I mean, but it's my generation too that we're at least in the South where soccer really kind of started to go, okay, this is something we're going to do and we're going to play. And it's now, you know, my generation is 40 with a little bit of disposable income that can, you know, go to matches and take vacations to destination cities to go to matches and stuff like that.
Well, it's so big with young people because, you know, it's when I was growing up, I'm 52. So when I was growing up, nobody played soccer.
Right.
And, you know, when I was in my 20s or 30s, the people who played soccer, like at schools and high schools and stuff, those were typically like the geeks or whatever. And that's not the case anymore. And so you have these young people who play soccer who now can watch Premier League and La Liga and Bundesliga and MLS and all this stuff. It's they can stream it on their devices, obviously. Well, those people, like, you know, they're 15, 16, 17, 18 years old right now. Well, in 10 years, they're the ones that are young. They've got their, you know, they got a job, starting to have just a little bit of expendable income, can't afford NFL tickets, but they can afford MLS tickets. And that's where I think these fan bases grow. Like, you see that beautiful stadium that they built in Nashville for, you know.
Dude, absolutely.
Nashville SC. And that's a cool event. And the thing is, I think we can get hung up on quality of play. But if you build these cool stadiums and you put them in places where there's bars and pubs and restaurants and stuff around and you make it an event, it's a two-hour game. If the game starts at 2, it's generally over at 4. You know, you get together with your buddies at noon, you have a couple of pints and you go to the game, and after the game you go have a couple, and you know, it's an outing, and that's how you build popularity. And it's worked in Kansas City and Cincinnati and Nashville and lots of other venues. And you know, before the pandemic they were talking about building an MLS stadium right there on River North in Chicago. I haven't heard the latest on that. Carson and I, my son, have been out to a couple of Chicago Fire games when we were up in Chicago. You had to take transportation out to like the west side. It's like Brookfield or something. That's where it is. You know, it's not a particularly, but it was fun, but it would have been more fun if it was there in the city.
In the city, yeah. That makes sense. Yeah, because I mean, it's like in Atlanta, man. Like Christopher and I have gone to some Atlanta FC games or Atlanta United. And it's in Mercedes-Benz, so Like, we stayed downtown. We walked through, like, Centennial Park area. And, you know, we walked to the stadium. We walked back to our hotel. It was a lot of fun, man.
All right. I guess we should talk about stuff.
Yeah, we can talk about all the other cities that we're going to be having the World Cup hosted.
Where are they?
Dude, I love soccer, and I'm so glad that. And one of the cool things, very selfishly, and we can move on to another topic, is so when World Cup comes, you know, Christopher's going to be 22. Bella is going to be 20. But Christopher, obviously, I mean, like, he's playing soccer at Millsaps. He's pole vaulting at Millsaps. Like, he's an athlete and he loves soccer. So this is going to be such an awesome event or experience for me, being very selfish, because it's like, it's something my kid is passionate about and loves. And we're going to get to watch, you know, the biggest games in the world in the U.S. It's going to be awesome.
So I'm
very selfishly excited.
The cities in North America, New York, New Jersey. So they're going to play it out at the MetLife or whatever it's called. Yeah.
Are they playing at Red Bull or MetLife?
No, they're playing MetLife.
Okay.
Philadelphia, they'll play it at the Eagle Stadium.
Eagle, is that Lincoln?
Yeah.
Whatever.
It says Boston, and I wonder whether that's Foxborough or whether that's in a stadium in Boston. I don't know.
I bet it is going to be Foxborough, because I know the San Francisco one is actually Santa Clara. Or wherever the 49ers stadium. Is it Santa Clara? Is that where?
Yeah, so I found it here. So this is actually, it's turning into a soccer show. You just never know what's going to happen on Mind of My Money. All right, they're playing in Seattle. They're playing at Lumen Field, which is the Seahawks stadium.
Okay.
69,000. It'll be once they put it in, soccer, it'll hold 61,812, and that is where the Seattle Sounders play. Also, they play they play MLS there.
I didn't know San Francisco.
It's at Santa Clara at Levi Stadium. It'll hold 70,909. In Los Angeles, it's in Inglewood at SoFi Stadium, where they played the Super Bowl this last year. It'll hold 70,000. They're playing in Dallas. We mentioned Jerry World.
Yep. I imagine it's going to be at Jerry World.
It is Jerry World. Right. It is Jerry World. I got to tell you, that would not be a terrible place to go see the World Cup.
I'm going. I'm going to try to get tickets for Dallas. I want to try to get tickets for Kansas City. I'm going to try to get tickets for Atlanta. If I can get tickets in Miami, you know, I'll go down to Miami. And I've got family in Miami, so it's a lot easier to do that and knock some of that expense down. Cause like, where my family lives is actually not far from Hard Rock.
Dallas, by the way, is where the semifinals and finals will be.
Whoop, whoop. I doubt I'll be able to get a ticket to the finals.
Probably not. So Houston would be an option for you. Houston is going to host the quarterfinal and the third place match at NRG Stadium there in Houston.
Yeah. I bet you what's going to happen. There's going to probably be several of the soccer dads from our area. I bet we end up carpooling to some of these places.
Kansas City, they're going to play at Arrowhead. It's quarterfinal and third round games will be played at Arrowhead. I mean, that's the one I want to go to.
Yeah, I do too, man. I mean, dude, if you want a road trip, I'll road trip with you. I just remember we're if we drive, we're cool, because I'm a right lane driver, passing the left lane, get back in the right lane.
There you go. Atlanta's drivable. It's a semifinal game at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Let's see. Miami is at Hard Rock out in Miami Gardens. That is going to be a quarterfinal. Philadelphia is going to play at Lincoln Financial Field, which we talked about. That's going to be a quarterfinal and a third place game. And then we mentioned MetLife. It's going to be the opening game. Now, this is the opening game and the final. I don't know whether that's – I don't know.
I wonder if that's bracket. I wonder if that's
– Boston, by the way, is Foxborough, and it's going to be home to one of the semifinals. And then in Mexico, Mexico City at Estadio Azteca, which is a very very famous stadium there.
Very famous stadium. And, dude, honestly, it would be kind of cool to go to a game there, too.
They're going to have an opening match.
I just
match
don't know
there.
The expense.
Yeah, I don't either. I've never been to Mexico City, and I've heard.
I haven't either.
I've heard it's awesome.
Dude, Mexico City World Cup is probably going to be stupid exciting.
Yeah. Monterrey, they're playing at Estadio BBVA. It's going to be a round of 16 game. Guadalajara is at Estadio Akron.
Okay.
They're going to have a round of 16 game there. In Canada,
Vancouver.
In Canada, they're going to play it at BC Place in Vancouver, which is where the Whitecaps play. It's also where the British Columbia Lions play Canadian football. It's a round of 16 game in Toronto. So this is interesting. In Toronto, I would have thought they might play at Sky Dome, but they're not. They're playing at BMO Field, which is the home to Toronto FC. Yeah. It's also the home to the Toronto Argonauts. That's a round of 16 game.
What's the capacity in that in BMO?
45,500. Okay. For the World Cup, it'll be 40,100.
Wow, so it's going to be half of the
yeah.
essentially half of the seats in the
yeah.
in football stadiums in the US. Wow. And I mean, and honestly, like I probably am not going to get to Toronto or Vancouver. Probably not going to get to Seattle or San Francisco or LA either. Or New York or Foxborough for that matter, or Philly. But dude, I'm going to be saving some Jack and I'm going to spend it like I wanted at the casinos whenever World Cup comes. I mean, dude, I love World Cup, man. And I just love soccer too. So
it's one of the reasons I'm really looking forward to this fall. In November and December, we're gonna have.
Which is so weird that World Cup is not happening right now.
But we're going to have NFL, college football, World Cup.
Yep.
All that stuff going on at once. It's actually just going to be sports overload, frankly. And then, you know, by then the NBA will be going. I'm an NBA guy. I love it. I turn it on in my office when I'm working. It's fun. I enjoy it. It's going to be sports overload at that point. But, yeah, summer of 26, if I'm still fortunate enough to be here and be healthy and whatnot, that's like Carson will be 20 at that point. That'd be a fun experience.
Yeah, dude. I mean, that'll be a fun experience, especially for Carson, dude, since he's a player of the game and loves it. I mean,
oh, yeah.
And then you as a dad watching your kid have the time of his life, I mean, that's a –
Well, it's fun watching him now because like he's playing high school ball and he's playing club ball and you know it's when they're little kids, there's not a lot of strategy, and even in middle school and stuff and travel that you can see the strategy, but they're not good enough to execute it.
Yep.
And now, you see them. They had a scrimmage the other night against Tupelo, and in the first portion of the scrimmage, it was really hot, and the heat got them. And they didn't possess the ball, and Tupelo had them running, and they were gassed, and they all looked like hell, and they were bent over and dying, and it was like, man. They had a break, and the coach came and talked to them and stuff. And then in the second stanza of the scrimmage, they really took what they knew what they'd screwed up, and they kind of fixed it, and they played really pretty soccer. And it's fun, and now you can I never played the game. I never really watched the game before Carson, and so I'm kind of learning soccer as I go, and now I catch myself, like I'm upstairs and I'll be on the Peloton or whatever, and I'll turn on a La Liga game or something like that, or the Spanish league, which is
La Liga.
Yeah.
It's in Serie A is Italian.
Serie A is the one I was thinking about. Sometimes those
Bundesliga, Germany.
Yeah,
I
kind of like Bundesliga, by the way.
The Germany league is legit. It's just
they play different soccer too.
Play different soccer.
That's
yeah,
what's
they play
interesting.
Dutch style.
Yeah, it's interesting to kind of now that I've watched enough soccer to sort of begin to understand it, and so it makes it fun. And so, I'll watch an MLS game. I mean, just for the hell of it.
And the cool thing about like
just to kind of learn the
World
sport
cup and just like what you've experienced when you watch the Premier League. Stuff or European professionals is you get to see the personalities of the countries and their style of play. It's like Spain has a very fast, you know, lots of passes. It's like a little ping pong match that's or pinball match that's happening, you know, on the field. And then the Brazilians just are have so much flair and kind of show off and they play fast as well. And then like the Germans are very disciplined, possess the ball, try to slow the game down, and then just dart you with when you make a mistake, they make you pay for it. And then you have British style, which is kind of like, I look at like American football. It's like, they're just going to smash mouth you. And they play a very disciplined game of soccer. And the Italians are kind of flary like the Spanish. It is cool to see the personalities there.
Yeah. So I enjoy it. You know, it's been a fun thing for us because he likes Chelsea and I jokingly like Tottenham and you know
dude I like Tottenham too
they've actually gotten a lot better Son is terrific and it looks like they're at least trying to hang on to Harry Kane and they've gone in and made some acquisitions and you know I'll get up early on a Saturday or a Sunday and turn it on. It's just I enjoy it. It's kind of fun. Let's before we bolt, let's touch on some of these items.
Let's actually talk about money for a minute.
All right. So the big story here is the Fed.
Yep.
Fed official calls for aggressive hike rates. This is Michelle Bowman says the central bank needs to raise interest rates above certain measures of anticipated inflation rates. They're talking about said she strongly supports the Fed's 0.75 percentage point rate increase last week and that she would favor raising the central bank's benchmark rate by another 0.75 point or 75 basis points at the central bank's next meeting, July 26th and 27th. She says, based on current inflation readings, I expect that an additional rate increase of 75 basis points will be appropriate in our next meetings, as well as increases of at least 50 basis points in the next few subsequent meetings, as long as the incoming data support them. She said she supported raising short-term interest rates so that after adjusting them for inflation or in real terms, they are no longer negative. Last week's rate increase brought the central bank's benchmark federal funds rate to a range between 1.5% and 1.75%. So explain it to people like me, like we're five, what this means.
So I'm gonna back up before I dive into the explanation, because I want to talk about the things that raising rates from the Fed's tools, what they don't do, which is, I think, when I watched the Senate, you know, testimony yesterday when Jay Powell was, and he does this after every Fed meeting, he goes to you know, to both houses or both chambers and you know, and takes questions from them, and that's become a part of the process, and now it's televised, where it used to, I mean, before no one cared, you know, and now people care. And I and it's funny, yesterday one of our senators said that he was the most powerful person in the world from an economic standpoint, which I have been saying that for, you know, for years, and I pay attention to what the Fed does. But anywho, one of the things that the Fed can't control is, so like they control, when they measure inflation, they are measuring core inflation, which is everything minus food and energy. So headline inflation is food and energy, which both of those are really two of the sectors or areas where there's been the most inflation, right? In gas prices and at the grocery store. But there's nothing that the Fed has, their tools do not impact energy prices or food prices, because their tools really are financial impacts, which will slow down lending, you know, squeeze out, like in the housing markets, you raise interest rates for mortgages, demand drops for, you know, for housing, you know, you raise the rates for, you know, auto loans, people, the demand for auto loans will begin to, you know, to abate and fall. You raise the rates for, you know, the, what businesses can borrow money to build new stuff, then it'll slow down, you know, what's called CapEx or capital expenditure spending. But by raising rates, it does not bring down the price of fuel or the price of food, which fuel drives the price of food as well. So that was one of the things that he was talking about. You know, what the Senate, the some of the Senate members, which we elected them. I'm going to start saying, I'm going to start it with that. We elected them. And I don't know what that says about us as an American people, but they asked the dumbest questions to him. I have no idea how he kept a straight face while, you know, while testifying to them, because they kept asking the same questions, like, what are you going to do about fuel prices? What are you going to do about, you know, grocery store prices? And he kept telling them, that's your job. You guys have the power to create policy to, you know, to help with those things. I don't have those tools. So anyway, you know, even if they raise rates, you know, another 0.75%, 0.75, that's on the, that's short-term rates. So short-term rates are behind the eight ball on, you know, as they relate to inflation. But if you get out to the, you know, the longer term bonds, like your 30-year bonds, those interest rates, and we're talking about core CPI here, not core, is the core inflation is minus food and energy. But those interest rates are starting to get closer and closer to what inflation really is, because they're going up as well. And then if you're talking about long-term inflation, like over a period of 30 years, they're ahead of what long-term inflation is going to be. That's why those don't have a long-term negative, you know, negative real return, because you've got a longer period of time. Inflation's not going to stay at, you know, 6%. Core inflation is not going to stay like that for 30 years. But on short-term things like a one-year treasury bill or note, you know, if you're if you're getting 2% on your 1 year treasury note and inflation's 6, you are behind, you have a negative real return, on the short term. So that's how you can have, you know, negative real returns. And that's why they're saying he's behind the eight ball, because they say that, you know, short term bonds should be pretty much in check with inflation. However, on the flip side, for a long period of time from like 2009 through, you know, through last year, short-term bonds, even though they weren't paying a whole lot of interest, you know, they were paying 1% or so interest, but inflation was literally at zero. So it was ahead of, you had a positive real return by 1%. So the goal with short-term, you know, short-term bonds is to be, you know, just keeping pace with core inflation. But the problem is, man, is, and I don't have to tell you this, I don't have to tell our listeners, the problem is not the core stuff. The core stuff is like housing, cars, you know, durable goods like toothpaste, toothbrush, shampoo, stuff like that. But the problem for us is that the energy and food prices are, have just continued to go up. And I know that Biden talked about doing a tax holiday, and they said some crazy shit like, you know, oh, it's the corporate greed is what's driving, you know, these prices for gasoline. But the truth of the matter is oil is set at the global level. It's not set by the United States. It is not set by ExxonMobil or, you know, or Shell or BP or ConocoPhillips. It is set at a global level. And, you know, until there's more supply in the market, then prices are probably going to stay somewhat elevated, or either demand is going to have to come down. But I just don't see that happening in the summertime. You know, people are going to go on vacation and travel during the summertime, you know, and I'm not going to pretend to be an expert on oil, but, as I understand, we have released some of our strategic reserves. As I understand, oil refineries in the U.S. are at capacity for you know, for processing oil into gasoline. But so it's, you know, the rest of the world, if OPEC decided to release more gas or release more oil, then it would flood the market with supply. You know, and maybe gas prices would fall a little bit. But we have no tools for gas. And the tax holiday is like 20 cents a gallon federal. I don't know what state taxes are on gas.
There's no excuse for gas prices to be what they are. There's no excuse for it. I mean, listen, this is intentional. I've said this. I'll consistently say it. The gas prices, this is intentionally inflicted pain on the American populace by a very small handful of people who are trying to force an agenda down throats while they still have power. You cannot convince me otherwise.
Oh, I'm not going to try to not convince you.
I mean, it's insanity, honestly. And frankly, I never want to be the guy that loses faith in like the American way and the American public. I try not to be the guy that goes, everybody's stupid. And maybe in November I'll be proven right. I'm surprised there's not more just outrage. Because you could solve the problem so quickly. Because the truth is a fairly ineffective president did.
It took a little time for that to flow through. But yeah, if 2 years ago we would have said, you know, hey, let's be realistic. There's no way that we're going to be, you know, independent of fossil fuels. That's just not a realistic policy.
No.
And we would have left the policy. I mean, even if they tightened it a little bit to say, hey, we would like to become less dependent on fossil fuels, and maybe you tighten the policy a little bit, you know, at the executive level of, you know, of government, and say, hey, we're working on getting there, but versus just the pendulum swinging so far going, no, we're going to be totally independent of fossil fuels, because it takes a little bit of time to trickle through, you know, for prices. But shit, dude, Trump, I mean, I am not a Trump fan. I'm not one of the Trump's not my boy, but man, he did have some pretty effective policies on energy.
Yes,
Economics. He was an asshole.
But here's what's wrong with Biden and his people on this. And I'm going to read from the Wall Street Journal. This is from their editorial board, and they're nailing it here. So it says, let's call the roll on President Biden's ideas to reduce high gasoline prices. He's tried lobbying the Saudis to no avail. Releasing oil from the U.S. Strategic Reserve, the market yawned. Attacking oil and gas companies for not drilling or refining enough, but he also wants to put those companies out of business. Now comes the feeblest effort so far, a White House request on Wednesday that Congress suspend the 18.4 cent a gallon federal gas tax for 3 months. That's only long enough to reduce the irritation of drivers or voters every time they fill up the tank during the summer driving season. Has there ever been a more transparently cynical vote-buying policy exercise? Ah, yes, we forget student loan cancellation. Democrats have long mocked the idea of a gas tax holiday. In 2008, running against John McCain, Barack Obama...
Dude, Obama smoked him on that.
...dismissed it as a political gimmick.
Yeah.
Speaker Nancy Pelosi sniffed at the idea this spring, and on Wednesday, even she refused to endorse it. She's claimed oil companies wouldn't pass the relief to consumers, and Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen has echoed that view. The federal
and they may be right.
And they're probably right. The federal gas tax is levied when fuel leaves a refinery or is imported rather than at the point of sale, so a suspension would take time to filter to consumers and could be swamped by increases in the market price of crude. If crude prices climb to $140 a barrel in the coming months, and they could, drivers might not even notice the tax holiday. That's what happened. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say, this is not me being flippant by any stretch of the matter. So I hope our listeners don't think that I'm being flippant or being like a elitist or snooty. But so if gasoline goes from $4.59 a gallon to $4.39 a gallon for middle class families, I mean, that does nothing.
Of course not. It needs to go to $2.20 a gallon. Look, this is stupid. Yeah, or this is stupid.
Even $3, but
it's stupid.
Yeah. 20 cents off does. It's almost a slap in the face. It's like, oh hey, I did you this favor, and you're like, no, you didn't.
I'm gonna go,
put this on a credit card.
To me, his energy policies are the one thing that is the single thing that is indicative of an agenda that is frankly anti-American. It almost tells me completely this guy doesn't like people like me. And when I say people like me, what do I mean? I mean 50-year-old guy who works and drives a car. I mean, how many Americans meet that criteria?
Probably at least 35%, 30% of U.S.
Oh, I would guess it's significantly higher than that.
Of 50-year-old guys that drive cars?
No, just people who drive cars.
Oh, my bad, dude. I thought we were talking about 50-year-old dudes that drive cars.
Just a working-age person who drives a car.
Yeah, I'm going to say that's 70% of the population.
I'm convinced he hates those people.
Those are also the voting age people.
I mean,
so 100% of his voters.
I mean, they have doubled down and doubled down and doubled down on energy. There was a Quinnipiac poll where more than 60% of the people polled referred to the gas prices and rising energy prices as a quote crisis. Biden is flippant about it.
He is flippant. Thanks for using my word, man.
No, you're right. And look, no matter what you think of Biden, whether you think he's sharp, whether you think he's the old man who confusingly falls off his bike and really looks confused and scared, no matter what you...
terrified of the person that thinks he's sharp.
No matter what you think of him, the people around him in his circle are elitist. And they have... That is coming across in their policies.
So our boy Jay Powell has no tools to impact this piece of the inflation curve. And I think that was what he was trying to make apparent to, the Senate and Congress people. And there were, and everyone was trying to get their political jabs, in and the questions that they were asking him. And, and even some of them wanted him to comment on, were we wrong pumping liquidity into the markets as we did? And he handled those questions very well, saying like, hey, it's not our policy to make comments on. He's like, you hired me to do a job. I have two tools I can use. I can price stability, i.e. raising or lowering rates, interest rates, and full employment. Those are his two mandates. Those are the two jobs that he's been given by the government to perform. And he's not going to comment on any other things. But I kind of look at this dude and I'm like, man, you got an impossible job. And he's had an impossible, since the beginning, he has had an impossible job. When Trump was in office, he had an impossible job. Because I don't know if you remember Trump beating him up on, hey, you should drop these rates to zero so that we can compete with China. And he's like, no, that makes no sense from a philosophical policy standpoint. And he was right at that point, because if we would have dropped to zero when COVID hit, we were no bullets in the gun at all. We'd have just had to take it on the chin. It'd have been worse than what it was from an economic standpoint. But they're behind the eight ball, man. And it's and that kind of is his fault. And I'm just being honest, I like Jay Powell. That's been his blunder, is he started this too late. And like, we adjusted our portfolios last year in January thinking that he was going to start raising rates.
I remember you saying that.
About mid-year.
Yeah.
And then he didn't. And I was like, well, shit, we were super early to the party. And that was okay. It ended up being the right thing to do. We just ended up being a year early to the party.
Can I read? I know we're running late. We're going to stop.
Yeah, no, you're good.
But I'm going to read a few more paragraphs from this, because it's an opinion piece. But come on, it's the Wall Street Journal. They're pretty good at this. He even writes this. This is where they're so conflicted, this administration. And for the record, again, I wasn't a Trump guy. I'm quickly becoming Team DeSantis, but I still would like to hear more from him. Like so far.
You think Nikki Haley would be his number two?
I think she would be on a short list of candidates. Yeah, and I like her.
I'm on the DeSantis train. I know it's early, and there's some candidates haven't emerged yet.
We're not but a few months away from the start of that campaign cycle, and I mean, you know, we've talked about this. I mean, if November goes the way that
it should go,
well, not even the way that it should go. If it goes the way that, say, Bernie Sanders says it's going to go, I mean, I'll use Bernie Sanders here as the great predictor, so that it doesn't look like I've got some right wing spin on this. I mean, Bernie Sanders is probably probably never been called right wing, and I mean, he's telling them it's going to be really ugly. Anyway, this back to this column. It says, a federal gas tax holiday could also rob the Highway Trust Fund of about $25 billion a year in revenue, which was supposed to go toward funding last year's bipartisan infrastructure bill. Biden says Congress shouldn't rob the highway fund, but Congress would have to deficit spend or find revenue somewhere else. In recent months, a shortage of refining capacity has been driving up gasoline prices. Biden ordered U.S. refiners last week to come up with short-term solutions to increase capacity or else. But Biden won't take regulatory steps to ease the refinery shortage, such as reducing renewable fuel mandates. He also won't issue a waiver to the Jones Act for transporting fuels. He refuses to take any action that would challenge the climate lobby. One result is that Lyondell Basell can't find a buyer for its aging Gulf Coast refinery, notwithstanding the industry's current hefty profits. The refinery plans to shut down by the end of the year, which could push up gasoline prices even more. Mr. Biden could help lure a buyer by suspending all policies aimed at punishing fossil fuels, but he won't. And the gap between fuel demand and supply isn't a short-term problem that will vanish with the ceasefire in Ukraine. The International Agency last week warned that the global oil supply may struggle to keep pace with demand next year. ExxonMobil CEO Darren Woods warned Tuesday that supply could remain tight for 5 years. The only good news on the supply chain of late has been Biden's grudging concession to meet Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, whom he previously called a, quote, pariah, end quote. Biden's energy policy is a jumble of incoherence. He wants political relief from high gas prices, but only to get past the next election. What the U.S. oil and gas industry and American consumers need is a permanent regulatory holiday to increase domestic supply. Anything else is a holiday from reality. It's really well done. I could not agree with it more. It frankly should be enough to cost. I'm actually surprised there's not more pushback inside the Democratic Party on this. People are going to lose elections because of Biden.
Yep.
But if you push back in watch, someone will call me a racist for what I just read. If you push, but is this where we've created a culture of this you can't say anything, because if you say something, you're a racist, you're a bigot, you're a homophobe. This is about fuel. It's about energy.
I don't know how any comment about fuel or energy, what that has had to do with anything, especially the price.
Just kind of China. It's kind of where we've gone though, as a nation right now. There's this weird world where we make really dumb decisions.
Yeah, indeed, man. I mean, and we continue, and all I do is I look at our elected officials and go, man, that's the best we could do. And I mean, and I don't mean that from a, you know, from a, that's not a Republican or Democrat comment. I mean, because it was both parties asking the same stupid question. I bet you it was, and I'm not lying about this, Neil. We can go back and look at the recordings. I bet it was four in a row. And I think it was maybe the senator from Nevada, the South Dakota, and I can't remember which other states it was in sequential order, but it was like they ask the same, literally the same question, and almost didn't even rephrase the question. It was just the same question. And I was just like, oh my gosh, he answered it already the first time. But I guess that's probably pandering to constituents to say, hey, look, I was on record asking this question and, you know, he didn't answer me directly. And I mean, that's probably all political posturing, but I was just like, my God, we're wasting everybody's time doing this and probably money too.
Hey, enjoyed the time. I really did. It was a lot of fun.
yeah, man, it was kind of a good show. It was different than our normal stuff, but thanks for.
Yeah, I'm trying to think what I'll write in the description. It's like soccer and fuel.
And travel. I don't know.
Travel and the Fed, yeah. Oklahoma City, the Fed, soccer, and fuel prices. That's a.
Is Wizard of Oz? No, that's Kansas. Never mind. It was a stretch.
Hey, thanks to everybody for making us a part of your week. We'll be back. To my knowledge, we're both good next week for another edition of the show. So,
yep.
The fourth is still a couple weeks away, right? Yeah.
Yeah. I don't even know what day of the week that's on.
I don't either.
We'll figure it out.
Yeah. Let's figure it out real quick. So June 30th will be a Thursday. So July 1st is a Friday. Second, third, fourth is a Monday?
I'm pulling up my calendar. Fourth is a Monday.
Oh, that's pretty good. It gets a big long weekend.
That's great.
That's sweet.
I love it. I hate it when it comes on like Wednesday.
Yeah, because it's just like, this one day in the middle of.
Right in the middle of the week. So I'll almost rather be like, let's just work through this and just take off Friday.
Next year it'll be a Tuesday, which will turn into a 5-day holiday for everyone.
See, that's fine. You know, yeah. Right. Because people will be like, you know what? I'm going to go ahead and take an extra day of, you know, vacation.
Yeah. And then Monday, it'll be a Wednesday. And then, but
yeah, Wednesday's just
that sucks. Ugh. Once, yeah, once it becomes a Thursday, then it's like this monumental.
Yeah, then you got another 4-day weekend, man.
All right,
but Wednesday, yeah. Jesus,
jeez.
All right, my friend, I enjoyed it. Always enjoy it.
For Martin Palomo, I'm Neil McCready. That does it for this edition of Mind on My Money. We'll talk to you guys again next week. Until then, take care.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.